Allez les bleus, allez les bleus. Was that the cadence of it? It was something like that.
Yeah, that was.
Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football and your Ontario President's Choice winner's favorite OUA football podcast. Me and Tom are back on the mics. After a minor delay, I think just the jubilance of being at that Vanier, and we certainly have some stories and some experiences to share, was so overwhelming we needed the extra time to let it waft over us. But we're here to break down the 58th Vanier and give you some thoughts and reactions to the other news that came out around U Sports football. But before we dive into all of that, Tom Sterling, my friend, how the heck are you doing?
I'm doing well, my friend. I am doing well. It is bittersweet knowing that the U Sports football season is now officially done for 2023. But my goodness, what a final game that it was to cap off such an amazing season. So I'm excited to get into this. Like I said, it's a little bit bittersweet that I have to wait a long time to see any more U Sports action again.
Don't lie to the people, Tom. You've already rewatched the 09 Yates Cup 5 times since we left Kingston.
Hey. It's 3 times, but thank you.
Well, you know what? Just for me to you, Tom, it's such a privilege that I got to sit with you for your first OUA live game this year when we were at Ron Joyce watching your Windsor Lancers take out your McMaster Marauders, and I got to stand with you in watching our final game of U Sport football a few days ago, and we'll dive into all that briefly. So much to do, so much to cover. There's been obviously all the major award winners, including all Canadians that have come out in the time since our last podcast previewing the Vanier Cup. So we're going to start with all that because My, I know there has been a lot of scuttlebutt about all of those awards, and it was a lot of fun actually getting to talk to some of the folks in Kingston on Saturday for the Vanier about their thoughts on the matter. Tom, anything else we need to say before we just jump right into these names?
No, I think we've covered it off here, although I will tell you, you and I were going through the list on our way down to the Vanier, and obviously beforehand as well, and got a little fired up at some of the choices that were here. So I'm excited to get into this and finally share my thoughts on it.
Most certainly. Let's start from the top. As everyone knows now, the Heck Crichton Award winner for the 2023 U Sport football season is one Jonathan Senecal, also, of course, offensive MVP for the 58th Vanier Cup. Shout out to Mr. Senecal. Shout out to his Montreal Carabin. JP Metris Trophy for Lineman of the Year goes to a participant from the losing side of the Vanier Cup, that being Theo Benedict. And my, oh my, what a sight it was to be able to see him, not just in person, but as we'll get to briefly, just how close we got to get to Theo and then watch him live. And I believe Deshaun posted this on Persevere. And so in case you had missed it, I believe now was the first time a back-to-back JP Metris Award winner in the U Sports ranking. Tom nods his head. That's right. Yeah.
For an offensive lineman specifically, I think.
Offensive lineman specifically. Beautiful there. Our President's Trophy at the U Sports level goes to Harold Misen. Now having watched the last handful of games that he's played in and really just part and parcel with what that defense was. You talk about what it is to be clutch, what it is to elevate when the chips are on the table, when it's winning time, and that defense, we'll dive into more detail, and you obviously all saw it yourselves. The run that they've been on, capping it with that performance in the Vanier is one of, to Mr. Waller out there, dive into the books. I can't imagine there's been a team that's gone on a more impressive run on the defense side of the ball. And Misen obviously being the key cog in that equation. I'm going to jump over one talk about the Frank Tyndall Trophy for Coach of the Year, going to Chris Morris of the Alberta Golden Bears. Obviously, we talked about the running game that they had that made them such a formidable foe in the Can West this year. And so shout out to what he was able to do there. And and the Russ Jackson Award going to one Mark Rauhas of Manitoba, based on the photo they are showing. It looks like their center. So, more awards for linemen, no doubt warms Tom and my own hearts. I'd say so far, it's a good smile and nod list. Hey, you know what? Obviously, we could talk about some of the players out of our own conference that, you know, had their own terrific years. But, you know, at the end of the day, these sound like great athletes. We've seen a couple of them live now. It's the final name that has caused the eruption of chatter amongst OUA pundits and U Sports football pundits across the board, which is the Peter Gorman Trophy, a.k.a. the Rookie of the Year Award, which went to one Justin Cloutier of the Laval Rouge et Or. And you're saying to yourself, wait a minute, that's not how you pronounce Ethan Gorsuch. That's not how you pronounce Wilfrid Laurier University. Tom, what the heck is going on here?
Oh, I have no idea, Mr. Bader Shama. And I will say I do actually have a little bit of an issue with some other names on that list as well. But this is 100% the most egregious. When you take a look at Harold Misan, the man who won the President's Trophy, he finishes 36 total tackles, one sack, two interceptions, and a fumble recovery. Our man Ethan Gorsuch, 34 total tackles, 1.5 sacks, two interceptions, albeit no fumble recoveries, but he's on pace with the man who won the President's Trophy Award. We look at Justin Cloutier, 23.5 total tackles in the regular season, one sack. Where are you getting this? How do you justify that? Well, you know, Laval's defense must have been pretty good. Laurier's defense was fantastic. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me when you see the production that Ethan Gorsuch had on the field. Like, he's in the conversation, he's in the running based off of the stats with the defensive player of the year, let alone the rookie of the year. So yeah, I got real fired up when I saw that name. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and you know, going back to the piece on Misan as the President's Trophy Award winner, yeah, we can talk about that added piece as we talked about with Daniel Valente Jr. last year, of just that added aspect that when you are the leader of a defense that is so spectacular, it adds in that much more. It adds in just that much more, just flavor, if you will, and everything like that. But you're right. Like, Laurier's defense was spectacular. My computer is seemingly not letting me pull up the team stats as far as what they were doing defensively. But you look at that linebacking core, and this is sort of where I'm going to throw it back to you. Where, and just that box plan specific that they had, not to throw shade at the secondary, but just really looking at it, where across the front seven for Laurier, it was so great, and obviously with Ife Onyemenenum playing next to him. Like, is there any aspect, because, you know, I obviously we talked about Nicolas Roy and the performances he had in the playoff run for Montreal as well, but obviously Misen still seems to be the guy. From the games you watched with Laval, is it maybe something where Cloutier stands out that much more in relation to the teammates around him, where maybe with Gorsuch, it's like, well, you got Gorsuch, you got Onyemenenum, you got Brubaker, you know, all these guys that maybe it just, like, can he get lost in the mix? And if anything, I'm trying to devil's advocate this, you know, just trying to think of, like, how did this possibly come to pass? And of course, we have to admit our bias, just being more, having watched way more Laurier Golden Hawk games than Laval Rouge Or. But, like, do you have a sense of maybe there was something to that effect in there, or does that even make any sense? I don't know.
But, like, when you go on the official U Sports website here and you look up the little blurb that they have on Justin Cloutier, in seven regular season games, now they listed at 28.5, U Sports official stat page says 23, but classic U Sports in that regard, honestly. 28.5 tackles, including 22 solo tackles, which is ninth highest among all defensive players in the RSEQ and second on the Rouge et Or. Like, how is that super, like, above, like, impressive? Like, now listen, Justin Cloutier, phenomenal player. Don't get me wrong here, but when you look side by side, it should be a no-brainer. Ethan Gorsuch played unbelievably in his first campaign with the Laurier Golden Hawks here, and they go on to mention in this blurb about the two playoff games as well in the Laval section. That technically shouldn't count, because like I spoke to one Jack Moore here, and he pointed out to us when we were talking about how do they do the rankings or whatever, all of these President's Trophies, all of these major award winners are based off of the conference award winners, which are all based off of the regular season. So if we're going by regular season numbers against regular season numbers, the choice is clear here, folks.
Yeah, and you know what? I did manage to pull up the sports, the U Sports defensive stats, and oddly enough, it only actually shows 7 games for Laval, so I don't even know what to make of the numbers. But it's a defense. It's a difference of their defense giving up 16.4 points per game. Laurier's at 18.1. You know, it's really just across the board with these stats. You know, if you want to say where the biggest difference is, it's in, frankly, Laval's passing yards per game they give up, which is a good almost 50 yards less than Laurier. But then if you think about the role that Gregorczyk plays, it's going to be more so as that will linebacker and stopping the run, which Laurier, albeit by a smidge, does better than Laval. So, you know, just to the people saying like, well, it's not only stats, you look at the collective, there really isn't that much seemingly of a difference between these two teams. Yeah, it's a tough beat. It's a tough beat, and it was certainly on the minds of a lot of folks, and we don't need to say who those folks necessarily were, but as we'll get to, we got to talk to some pretty cool people at the Vanier Cup, as you'd expect, just from obviously the type of crowd that's going to draw. And this was a point of conversation for a few folks, though some people didn't want to dive into it too much because I think they wanted to hear firsthand on the podcast just how we were going to react to it. But yeah, it's a tough, what, you know, our boy Jack Moore, a tough beat for him on his predictions, you know. I guess he got Ethan Gregorczyk as rookie of the year. Maybe when he predicted that, he was just speaking Ontario in the OUA, in which case he got it right. But Tom, you know, let's not continue to feed a dead horse on this one. You said that maybe you had some thoughts on some of the other award winners, obviously not as outstanding in the in how we react to it, or is it worth noting, or should we move on to the All-Canadians?
No, I think the one thing that I also wanted to bring up here, because I did hear some rumblings as well from some other folks about one Mr. Jonathan Senegal, I think probably happened before the folks in Ontario really got a chance to watch this guy and see the things that he did in the Vanier Cup. And honestly, while he did have a great game, that's not even some of the best play that we've seen from this young man. When you look at the, once again, this is just purely based on stats, but when you look in these passing stats, our guy, Mr. Taylor Elgersma, has him beat in every major category here. Completions, attempts, the percentage, yards, yards per game, touchdowns, tied in interceptions, and efficiency. He's got him beat across the board here. And I know that a lot of people, well, some people might have been a little fired up at that. I will say I do, in this case, agree with the choice here with Mr. Senegal, because, you know, also he has the great rushing stats that he does, the rushing touchdowns and things. And when you see him and how much he meant to this Montreal team and this offense here, I do think that that gives the bit of the edge there. And the other thing as well, you know, it's not, once again, I don't think that they necessarily got this wrong, but I do want to make sure that we give a shout out to our guy, Max Carbonneau. Not just because he gave us a nice shout out on Instagram. That was a nice little bonus here. But like, the man finishes with 62 total tackles here, almost doubling what Missen had on the year here. Now, he only has one forced fumble and one fumble recovery and one pass breakup outside of that. And maybe if he got like a sack and interception, maybe it'll be a little bit. But like 62 tackles here. He's second in U Sports in total for tackles, only by one. Like, that needs to have a little bit something extra behind it. And now he won the Ontario, and that's absolutely warranted, whatever. But I just wanted to give a shout out to our guy here, because 62 tackles is not an easy thing to do, especially when, once again, like we were saying, you're filling in for another President's Trophy winner in James Peter. So, you know, shout out to Max Carbonneau for all of the amazing work that he did this past season.
I do have to make the correction of you making the same mistake I did, that James Peter wasn't the President's Trophy winner last year, though. It was our guy Daniel Valente Jr.
Daniel Valente Jr., damn it!
Roll Stangs. hey, what a terrific season it was for so many folks in the OUA. And you know what? Like, not that... obviously, the past 2 years with Western getting knocked out by Laval and then Montreal in national semi games has been tough for our OUA league and everything of that nature. And obviously next year, I mean, we were talking about this all game long, how incredible it is that it's still going to be in Kingston. And I had my reservations about the idea of a city hosting it twice in a row and what that was going to just, I don't know. It seemed like a bit of an odd maneuver. Kingston, Richardson Stadium should be where it always is. That was freaking amazing. And I am so stoked. Well, I guess the fact that it's going to be in Mosaic in 2 years will be pretty amazing as well. But the fact that next year we have the possibility of an OUA RCQ team facing off in Kingston in the Vanier, as they won't be facing each other in the national semis, is so amazing. But we are literally getting a year ahead of ourselves. There's so much to talk about in the here and the now. So let's dive into it, starting with our All-Canadians. And I guess the way to do this, I'll just rip through the list as quickly as I can, acknowledging the player, position, and school, and then we'll comment on the ones that stand out in specific. So with no further ado, here we go. First team offense quarterback, Jonathan Senecal, Montreal. Running backs, Matthew Peterson, Alberta, Jared Kasari from Queens. Receivers, Ethan Jordan, Laurier, Darius Simmons, McGill, Savon Magne-Jones, Western, AK Kasama, Manitoba. At center, Daniel Shin, Alberta. Guards, Giordano Vaccaro, Manitoba, Alassane Diouf, Montreal. At tackles, Theo Benedict, UBC, Eric Anderson from Western, utility man, Lucas Robertson from UBC. On defense, at defensive tackles, Christopher Fontenelle from Montreal, Darian Newell from Queens. Defensive ends, Jeremiah Ojo from Montreal, Tyson Hergott from Waterloo. Linebackers, Harold Misan, Montreal, Nick Weeb from Saskatchewan, Ife Anumenenem from Laurier. Safety, Jackson Finley from Western. Halfbacks, Bruno Legesse, Montreal, Eric Cumberbatch from Ottawa, and at cornerback, Callan Saint-Cyr, Montreal, and Catley Joseph from Saskatchewan. On special teams, punter, Aldo Galvin, Regina, punter kicker, Ben Hadley from St. FX, returner, Javoni Cunningham, Windsor, and rush cover, Charles Elliott Boulien from Montreal. Second team offense, quarterback, Taylor Algersma, Laurier. Running backs, Malcolm Bussey, St. FX, and Amilcar Polk, Ottawa. Receivers, Raiden Thorne, Laurier, Kasim Ferdinand, Carleton, Ben Harrington, UBC, Hassan Dosso, Montreal. Offensive line, Ryan Berta at center from Queens. Guards, Matthew Luden at Alberta and Evan Florin from Queens. Tackles, Giovanni Manu from UBC, Nathaniel Dumoulin-Duguay from Laval, and utility, Nicholas Henning from Queens. On defense, tackles, Mufta Ageli from Windsor and Kyle Sampson, UBC. Defensive ends, Kaladia Musin from Windsor and George Idoka from Saskatchewan. Linebackers, Nicky Ferriancio from Montreal, Max Carboneau, Ottawa, Lawrence Bowers-Kane, Western. At safety, Jonathan Gastini from Alberta. At halfbacks, Christophe Beaulieu from Laval, Daniel Bell from Mount Allison. Cornerbacks, Jacin Stats-McLean from St. Mary's and Louis Laveau from Carleton. And on special teams, punter Michael Horvat from McMaster, punter kicker Vincent Blanchard from Laval, returner Guillaume Cochin from Laval, and then rush cover Skylar Griffith from UBC. That is a list of fantastic names, though not imperfect from our criticism. We're not impervious to our criticism. Tom, I know your number one comment is, how the heck did you get a McMaster Marauder on an all-Canadian list in 2023? Shout out to Michael Horvat, though, really holding it together for that squad. You know, I feel, can we start, where do you want to start, Tom? Because I feel like it's going to, well, the main comment I think we have, or one of the main comments, reflects the very same comment we made when the OUA All-Stars came out. Is that where we're going to start on here, Tom? I'll give you the floor and you get the ball rolling here.
No, you know what? We're going to start with some positivity
here.
We're pretty positive people here. Shout out to Eric Anderson, first team All-Canadian, man. He missed I think one full game, maybe a half game or whatever because of that injury, but hell yeah, he showed that dominance. He deserved that All-Canadian status. So I was fired up to see that. Savon Magne-Jones 100% deserved that as well. And Jared Kasari, man, that dude balled out for Queens this year. He was a stud. Really came alive, obviously, in the second half of the season. But yeah, I was fired up to see our OUA representation on that first team offense.
And on that piece with Jared Kasari, you know, the one thing that U Sports does with the All-Canadians that the OUA doesn't for OUA All-Stars is obviously this utility man piece. And it goes without saying, I mean, obviously with Ryan Berta and Evan Florin on the second team offensive line from Queens, getting one Nicholas Henning from Queens, sort of that H-back player for them, which when you watch the way Queens runs the ball, they're bombering guys in, kicking out ends, slicing, and all this type of action they're doing. You know, it's not, it's like there are obviously times when a running back has just a out of body season and just performs just by the grace of who knows what and what have you. A lot of the time, it's because of great offensive line play, great H-back play, and of course, everything else in the offense. So I love that with Kasari getting recognized as the best running back in Canada this year, they also recognized a number of players from that offensive line and just that run game in general with Henning. So I appreciated him getting the shout-out as well. Next point, Tom.
Yeah, you know what? I think it would have been really hard to take a look at you know, there's only so many receiver positions you can give or whatever else. Ethan Jordan, unbelievable this year, really lights out. It was really the Ethan Jordan Raiden Thorne show, it seemed to be the entire time. And while I do agree giving that slight edge to Ethan Jordan, I still 100% stand by my previous statement that I said Raiden Thorne has the best hands in U Sports right now. Some of the catches that I've seen him make have just been absolutely outstanding, but I wanted to just shout out to those two outstanding Laurier receivers as well. Amilcar Polk 100% deserves to be there. If Matthew Peterson didn't win the Can West All-Star or Offensive Player of the Year, I would have been fighting real hard to see Polk in that first team spot as well. But I do think that they got that part right. Taylor Elgersma, obviously. We've talked about this man for so long this entire season. But yeah, he deserves every single bit of accolades that that man has gotten. Absolutely. What do you got to say?
I just want to give a short plug on Tom and my ride back from Kingston. We had a little fun diving into some of the At the 55 archives. If you haven't been tuning in for the full duration of our existence dating back to 2018, we did a series called the Freshman 15 that we're looking at rekindling. And Elgersma in 2020 was one of the first guests we had on there. You can still find it on our Spotify. And it's a really fun listen going back to hearing me interview Taylor after his first year, which was removed by COVID. And he just got time spending time around the organization doing Zoom school and things like that. But it was really funny just listening back. I kind of forgot that was in our archives. So that was a really fun part of our trip, and just wanted to plug some of our own content there. Tom, but it seems weird. Obviously, young Mr. Hillock doesn't make this list. When you only have two quarterbacks, it's going to be a tough thing to do. But he only got one receiver on the list. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All kinds of fired up for that one here. Listen, that Western offense, and sure, some people might have just tuned in the national semi and saw that and been, oh my God, what is everybody talking about? The OUA is falling off. The OUA sucks. I saw a lot of those kind of comments here. Let me tell you, it was an off game for the Mustangs. Should they have played a lot better? Absolutely. Did they? No, they did not. And we went into that, and I'm sure that Evan and the rest of that team will acknowledge that that was certainly not the best game that they had played. However, that Western offense in the regular season is one of the best that I think we've seen in a little while here, especially in the pass game. To not have Mohsen Jamal or Seth Robertson on this list along with Savon Magny-Jones blows my mind a little bit here. And listen, I don't want to go into this one particular player here, but there is an outlier on this list on the second team receiving corps here.
Kasim Ferdinand.
It should have gone to... Hey,
it's Kasim Ferdinand. I'll say it is.
Listen, Kasim Ferdinand, hell of a player, hell of an athlete. Don't get me wrong here, but he does not have the numbers that goes up against Seth Robertson or Mohsen Jamal. Either one of those guys should have been on this list. For God's sake, Seth Robertson, I'm pretty sure, led the league in touchdown passes or touchdown receptions here. Like, if that doesn't count for a nod at an All-Canadian, what are we doing here, folks?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the other names on this. I mean, like, once again, in the same way that we're trying to preach for non-OUA fans to pump the brakes on what they thought it like our teams were like this year from what happened to Western, I'm trying to do the same with Montreal, just because, like, the story of that Vanier Cup run was the defense. Yeah. Like, the very reason that you can say, you know, still might have been Elgersma for the Hec Crichton is somewhat clouded by the fact, and this kind of goes back to that conversation, ironically, of, like, when you get more data of a player, that can both swing positively and negatively, because Senecal very much kept performing as that one-man wrecking crew as their offense, but it was less of a wrecking ball and more of, like, I don't know, like a Nerf gun at times, it felt like. From, like, if we're talking about the Hec Crichton Award winner, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, once again, you can see the talent. You can look at the games he played all year long. That's not me taking a shot. It's just saying that much like how Western didn't live up to what they play, how they played in the regular season in that UTEC game, I'm certain, like, I would surely hope that Senecal's regular season looked a heck of a lot better than his performances in the playoffs. And once again, he was very good, but, you know, if we're talking about the best player in all of Canada. So I say that, and then saying, well, Hassan Dossou, being a second-team All-Canadian, I'm not going to try and take a shot at that, because, once again, that I think would be showing my bias. We obviously saw with Ben Harrington when he went down in the Mitchell, just how St. FX's offense was able to falter. And so it just really feels like, you know, and like first team, once again, I can't speak on Gassama from Manitoba or Simmons really out of McGill, but just, it's where it then comes back once again to Ferdinand, and whether you look at team success, whether you look at, sure, they passed the ball really well, but just that was a really good receiving core. I'm rehashing what we talked about when the OUA All-Stars went out. And hey, like, no one on this planet outside of the Ferdinand family and their close relations talks about Kasim Ferdinand as much as we do in an overwhelmingly positive manner. It's just, yeah, it is what it is. And yeah, whether it would be Mohsen Jamal or Seth Robertson, it does feel weird that we didn't have another Mustang adorning this list. Was there anything else? I mean, I guess, you know, people were kind of fired up about Cunningham getting the first team OUA All-Star returner. Obviously, yeah, over,
Sorry, just before we lose there, I still feel really weird about, like you said, talking about Kasim Ferdinand there, because we are really high on him. So instead, I'm going to go after Dossou. That's what I'm going to do here, because you may take the high road, but I'm still going to be petty as hell. Let's go through it just stats-wise here, because I'm still feeling a little fired up.
Dunk on him.
Seth Robertson, 31 catches, 590 yards, 8 touchdowns regular season. Mohsen Jamal, 44 catches, 700 yards, 5 touchdowns. Mr. Dossou, 33 catches, 489 yards, 4 touchdowns. Listen, folks, the writing's on the wall here. There's not a lot of players that played better than the two of those guys here. So, we started advocating for him a little late into the season, quite honestly. Seth Robertson played absolutely outstanding. He has been a solid player for the Western Mustangs for the entire year here. If you're going, like, ranking wise, Stevan Magne Jones is still the first team All Canadian. Don't get me wrong here, but Seth Robertson is damn close to that. So the fact that he doesn't get a nod at all here, the fact that he doesn't even make first team OUA All Star, woo-wee, gets me all kinds of fired up here. That's it. I'm done. I will lay it to rest.
I'll just add in lastly, you know, supremely pleased, though, of course, we could maybe make the Ethan Gorsuch case, much like we did for Rookie of the Year, to maybe sneak onto one of these lists. I forget. Wait, actually, I forget what his status was in terms of OUA All-Stars, but putting that aside, I'm sure there's other names defensively. Obviously, you know, Ife Onyeka doesn't make this list. Pardon me. But just seeing, like, because and maybe this is part and parcel. We look at how Montreal won that Vanier on the back of such a supreme defense. You know, when we just looking at these OUA teams we had this year, yeah, we had some incredible offensive performances, but just seeing some of these names like Darian Newell, and obviously that brings to mind that Queens defense and what Van Wishart and what Silas Hubert was leading for them, and, you know, guys like Colonna and Sutherland and all these other guys, Pace on Stephon East on that defense, right? Seeing Tyson Hergott, this truly disruptive force for that Waterloo defense, almost single-handedly helping them sneak into that playoff berth, albeit however nasty they lost that might have been to Laurier. Anya Menonim, as we thought, perhaps going to win the President's Trophy out of Ontario, one of the best, flip a coin between him and Carboneau, who the best defensive player was. Well, obviously guys like Hergott as well, but a small list of names who you're going to say who the best defensive player is in Ontario from this year. And in that fold as well is one Jackson Finley at safety for them. And going back to that UTEC Bowl, I mean, he was, we talked about that defense keeping them in the fold, and it was what he did specifically in that game, but all year long as well. Love seeing my guy Eric Cumberbatch on that first team at halfback, and then on the second team, obviously the dynamic duo of Ageli and Amusan, right? Kaladi and Mufta, Carboneau, Bowers, Kane in the linebacking core, that's disgusting, and Louis Laveau from Carleton at cornerback there, just that massive shutdown corner. So, just once again, so reflective, and obviously there's a lot of offensive talent on these lists too out of the OUA, but for the same reasons that it upsets us, it's also such a beautiful way of just taking a chance to reflect on all the positive things from this year. And, though I don't know if there are such, outlets like ours in the other conferences, I'm sure if there were a At the 55 Can West edition, RSCQ edition, AUS edition, they might be having the exact same conversations looking at the lack of representation in certain spots from their guys. Despite our thoughts, despite any of your thoughts, at the end of the day, whatever conference you root for, whatever team you root for, it's a great opportunity to just say what a wonderful spot Canadian football is in right now. Final thoughts, Tom, as we wrap that up, and I guess it's time to move into the Vanier.
Yeah. Well, I know I spent a lot of time talking about the offensive players here. Obviously, we've talked about the unbelievable play that we've seen from Tyson Hergott, Claudia Moose, and Mufta Ageli. I am so happy to see Darian Newell get the nod for first team defensive tackle here. That man really did everything that he was required, what was asked of at Queens. At times, I felt like he was a bit of the unsung hero. We gave him a couple of shout outs as defensive player of the week in the regular season because some of the play that he did, but it doesn't always reflect on the stat line, some of the stuff that we saw from him. But I was so happy to see that he got that first team nod. He has been placed outstanding, like I said, for a Queens defense that is also really damn good even on its own here. So outstanding work to him. And I also love seeing Lowers Bowers Kane get the second team defense or second team All-Canadian at linebacker for Western here. I think he also had a hell of a year. He played really well as well here. So I just wanted to shout out those two names in particular. It was awesome to see. It's always awesome to see representation in the OUA in the All-Canadian status because, spoiler alert, we are biased. but specifically those two guys, I felt really played well in the regular season here and really showcased their stuff for their team. So shout out Darian Newell. Shout out Lawrence Bowers Kane, and shout out all of our OUA representatives.
In case you forgot or just aren't aware, Queens was third in all of Canada, giving up 102 rush yards per game. Western was right behind them in fourth at 104 yards per game, first and second belonging to Bishops and St. Effects. So, yeah, shout out to our OUA run stoppers league-wide. Well, then I guess with no further ado, we now turn to the 58th Vanier Cup. Tom, normally before we start recording, we go over to check in about all our award winners that we hand out hardware for the game. Little behind the curtain, I'm realizing now we didn't even talk about that one. But the fun thing with a Vanier Cup is that the powers that be at these games, which of course include one Steve Snyder, head coach of the Queens Golden Gaels, the host team, are watching these games, and a group of people that no doubt know a ton more, I shouldn't even say no doubt, that absolutely know a ton more about football than we could ever hope to learn, are voting on who the MVPs are of these games. So I guess just with that in mind, we can just once again recognize Jonathan Senecal, Harold Misan, and then I believe it was Boyer on the special team side, kind of that as that three-part, three-headed beast representing all three facets. And any additional sort of shout-outs we want to give off the jump before diving into the game and then everything else as part of our own experience there?
Yeah, I did want to give a quick shout-out to Jason Soriano from UBC here. He records three tackles, one sack, one tackle for loss, and an interception for the Thunderbirds, the lone interception in the entire game here. So I think he played really well for his team. I think he was doing everything that he kind of could and affected a lot. So I wanted to give him a quick shout-out as well, just on that defensive side of things. But yeah, when you look at some of the play, obviously from Misan, certainly from Senecal, I think it's hard to argue against it.
No doubt. And you know what? If we're giving out shout-outs, probably the good way to set up our story, our tale, our adventure down to Kingston is by shouting out a friend and former teammate of mine, one Jeremy Ambraska, who hooked us up with our tickets. But little did we know when we rolled into Richardson Stadium to pick those tickets up at will call, did they include VIP passes, which allowed Tom and I to stand in the end zone. You know, that's kind of the bit I had at the jump about I got to sit with you for your first OUA game of the year. Of course, it wasn't mine because I was coming from the Guelph U of T game earlier that very day, but we stood for the last one. And aside from a short period of time where we ventured into the pavilion to snack on some goodies and chit chat with some movers and shakers, we were standing for that whole game. I mean, hey, you know, if you're watching on TV, if you were there, whichever way you were consuming it, more so, of course, if you were there, it was a beautiful day. A bit late in the game, obviously, when the sun kind of ducked down a little bit, did it get particularly cold? But you could not have picked a better game. You know, obviously, as we thought it was going to happen with this game being so close to Quebec, the Montreal fans were going to come out in full force. From the moment we pulled into the parking lot, you knew Montreal came to play. They were doing the tailgate. Those hats they have are so amazing. Like, they were selling them there. Had they been, I would have had to been going against my, you know, my better notions of my teams and conferences I support to not have to buy one, because those are just so darn cool. But what a perfect day for Canadian football. And, you know, though, of course, it still feels weird that the Grey Cup wasn't the culminating game of football in Canadian football. And of course, the Vanier Cup wasn't either, because we had a series of OFSA bowl games this past week. Shout out to the Western Bowl champion South Lions out of London, Ontario. Had that been the culminating game, like, what, you know, just on all levels, from the game, the weather, the fans, to just every part of it, I can't levy an ounce of criticism about anything that could have happened on that day.
No, I don't think that you could. And really, first thing that I want to say, massive shout out to the Queens organization for putting on a phenomenal game here. First off, that stadium is beautiful down there. Brand new, the Stu Lang Pavilion as well. It's just the top tier that we've really seen from around the league here. And I'm glad that it got the ability to be showcased in that regard. The Queens football staff that we got a chance to speak to, obviously Coach Snyder there. We talked to Coach McManus, Tommy Canicius, like all of those guys were so welcoming, and they did such a great job in terms of, you know, the setup for the stadium. I'm sure they had a ton of other help from the events staff and from U Sports in general as well. But the day itself was just fantastic from that standpoint. Also, like you said, it was a beautiful day. You cannot ask for better weather at the end of November in Kingston, of all places, for it to be sunny and be enjoyable to be outside still. That is a very, very rare time, especially in Kingston, in that snow belt where they can just get pelted. So, yeah, it was an awesome time. And in my opinion, I think, honestly, my favorite part of the entire game was that Montreal fan base. They were loud. They were engaging. They were so awesome. It was so great to be around them. And one of the coolest things, Montreal had a bunch of people from alumni who played on the team on the sidelines. Marc-Antoine Ducroix came out onto the field to a roaring ovation from the Montreal faithful. It gave me goosebumps to watch it. It was so awesome to see. And still, I said it before, I will say it again. If the OUA had 1% of the passion that the RSEQ fans have for their teams, we would be in a much better spot in terms of fan engagement.
Most certainly. I mean, yeah, the Marc-Antoine Ducroix sighting was so cool. Like, you have to imagine, like, the week he's been on. Like, there are a few, like, shout out to you, brother. That's, you're on one kind of a bender, man. That's some good stuff you got going on there. Yeah, I mean, much like, it's interesting, and you're more plugged into the TVA, right? That's the broadcast company out of Quebec. But we talk so often about how the CanWest TV makes it look and feel like a CFL game. When you have a Quebec team, Montreal or Laval, in the house, it makes the live experience feel like you're at a CFL game.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they bring the talent on the field as well. But just, yeah, what a perfect day of football. And of course, the talent on the field, as we said, was not slacking. You know, what's so interesting, obviously, this run that the Montreal defense has been going on. And when we look back at what happened in this game, because it's easy to, you know, we obviously picked Montreal. I would assume Montreal was the betting favorite. UBC, like, I give them a ton of credit for the fight they put up in this game, not only being able to limit the performance of Senecal. He finishes the game, 16 of 17, 170, or 16 of 17, that's the one I have here, but I feel like that was off, but whatever it is. 16 of 17, 170, no touchdowns, and an interception, adds in 53 on the ground, and the touchdown, you know, limiting the heck in the capacity that does, that you do by that. But obviously, as we said, it's about the Montreal defense, and, you know, Garrett Rooker, he goes 26 of 40, 279. Isaiah Knight picks up 74 on the ground as well. You know, not the type of numbers they've necessarily been putting up all year long, but it reminded me so much, Montreal's defense, of what we've expected from Western's defense, of that bend but don't break, where UBC might be able to put a drive together here or there, but then the door would just shut just so rapidly and so fast. Obviously, we were watching from the end zone, and somewhat of a disappointment that CBC didn't repost the game on YouTube or seemingly on any of their feeds to get a more proper viewing of it. But I think it's still, you know, capable of saying that at the end of the day, both of these defenses really, really came to play in this one.
Oh, most definitely. I really loved, obviously, coming into this game, I think, even just because we had a chance to watch the national semifinal as well, we saw both of these teams obviously do their thing here, but that the way that Montreal played against Western and the way that they forced them into those bad decisions and the things that happened there, I think really was the most impressive, and why we came into this thinking that I think that was going to be the big turning point here. But like you said, UBC came to play here. Anytime you get a chance to limit Jonathan Senecal and even force him into situations where he doesn't want to be, like throwing an interception in the Vanier Cup, which is obviously not typical for him, like that's something that should be shouted out here. He did, and this team did, a really fantastic job just making sure that everything that Montreal did, it did come at a price. There were some times here when Montreal seemingly was able to move the ball, and obviously getting a couple of touchdowns here proved that, but still, like, they really just played outstandingly. Now, it does go to back to say how potent that Montreal offense is, in that in Jonathan Senecal's touchdown in particular, one area of loss of contain, and then suddenly Senecal takes off and he's gone for a 23-yard touchdown there. So you really could not afford to make any mistakes against this team. And not to say that UBC made a ton, but they did make a couple more than I think Montreal did. However, I do want to make sure that we go into this Montreal defense here, because they were just outstanding. Now, a lot of people have kind of been mentioning this, but I did get a chance to hear from one Gord Randall, one of the analysts here for Crown Gridiron Nation, that's plays on TSN. So if you haven't watched that show, you absolutely should. They do a great job of also covering Canadian content, and on a major network here with TSN as well. So that's something to be noting of. But Gord Randall in his breakdown went into a hell of a stat here. So not only does Montreal not give up a single touchdown in the playoffs, in 10 red zone trips between Laval, Western, and UBC, Sherbrooke didn't even get into the red zone, but in 10 red zone trips, they allow zero touchdowns, 18 points, so just 6 field goals, 4 and 4 turnovers here, which is outstanding. It's very, very easy. Well, not, I wouldn't say easy because that's not the case. It's much easier to score in the red zone in the Canadian game because our end zone is so much larger. You can be on the 20-yard line and run a streak and still be able to go into the end zone here. That sets us apart, certainly. But in that playoff run as well, they did not allow one single play over 30 yards. They limited every single major play. They turned the ball over. They were able to disrupt offenses, keep them out of the end zone here. So once again, shout out to Gord Randall for breaking that down. I do want to make sure that I'm doing that here. But my God, this Montreal defense was the real deal. And quite honestly, I don't know if you can actually outright say it, but it should be. They are now in the conversation for best defense to have ever played in the Vanier Cup or just in general here. I really think that they were up there playing against the teams that they played against in the dominating fashion that they had. Yeah, this team was damn good.
Oof, that's a whole discussion. That's some good offseason content to dive into. I mean, first thing that comes to mind when you say that is I'm thinking about a couple of Laval defenses from not so long ago with one Mathieu Betts and a couple other guys that have been having some pretty good pro careers since those runs that they had in the late 2010s. One of the things that really stood out to both of us, and in some regards, the angle we were standing at being, because we got the end zone cut, though we were at field level, that we got the wide shot or the tight shot, which is where you want to watch the box play. And going into this game, we obviously talked about, you know, with Manu and Benedict for UBC, how is Montreal going to look to attack this UBC offense, right? Do you just kind of not say give up, but you say we're not going to overinvest in trying to outmaneuver these two All-Canadians at tackle and the reigning two-time top lineman of all of U sports and Benedict specifically? What's the game plan? What are we going to do? And obviously we haven't been able to go back to watch it all, but I think a lot of credit is due, and I'm sure it's more than this name, but this is just one of the names that I've certainly been able to familiarize myself with, and no doubt you have as well, from the, you know, following Montreal much more thoroughly come the U Sport playoffs, is Christopher Fontenaud, 98 in the middle for Montreal, because really that's where as far as stopping this run attack in Isaiah Knight and getting pressure on Rooker was really coming from and making him uncomfortable. And, you know, it was so fascinating. And one thing I very much respect about UBC, and maybe this is what happens when your head coach is a former offensive lineman in Coach Nil, where, you know, even late in that game, and of course the deficit never became too substantial that you know, in theory, had to get away from your game plan per se, but they were running these counter tray looks, even without a counter tray look in the backfield, almost like a guard tackle pull, like power type look all game long. The pressure they had in the middle, I thought was substantial, but then even still, to your point, like even when Knight wasn't like terribly infrequent, that, I mean, he averaged around 5 yards where he would get by that first line of defense, but it stops there. Like, that's the whole thing, is it's like you might be able to get through for 3 to 4. It's not going to turn into 5 to 6 to 7. But, you know, just shout out to Fontenaud in the middle. Respect to how UBC stuck with that plan of running the ball and not giving up on that. And this, you know, to your point as well, just another way of just saying what a day it was for that defense.
Yeah, no, I love that you pointed that out as well, because certainly we came into this knowing that UBC's strength on that offensive line was their tackles, and that remained their strength. They played outstanding, and the pressure that Montreal got came up the middle. But to their credit, Montreal got a lot of pressure up the middle there. They obviously made sure to put their game plan into that. I think they did some twisting inside and they sent some blitzes in that. But They really had a solid game plan to go forward and make sure that they were getting after Garrett Rooker in some regard. The one thing that you and I talked about as well at the game that I wanted to make sure that we called out here, specifically for Montreal, I can't remember it on the UBC side. I think it's the same, but absolutely for Montreal, I did not see one single missed tackle. Mm. Every single time a Montreal defender came up against a UBC offensive player, it was dead right there. There was a tackle was made, pushed out of bounds, whatever you want to call it. I did not see, and that goes back to the same stat that we were talking about in that no offensive play over 30 yards. When you have such solid tackling like Montreal did, that defensive fundamentals have obviously been drilled into them practice after practice after practice, that adds such a huge layer to the effectiveness of your defense when you know for a fact, okay, sure, they had a big pass play or maybe they got some good blocks in the run game, sure. But the moment our guy comes in to make contact, that's it. The yardage is done. That is so underrated. And I don't think people realize how important that is here when you have not only solid tackling, but you have defensive players who are in position to make those tackles. Man, that absolutely led into why this Montreal team was so effective.
No, and it's a great point because, once again, the main story when we go back to that Western Montreal game was just all the ways, and not to discredit Montreal, but if we're being real, all the ways that Western shot themselves in the foot repeatedly with unforced turnovers or just trying to force balls into situations where, you know, whether it was when it was Evan in at quarterback, where it's just like, man, like you got to eat the sack at that point or throw it out of bounds. Once again, we know he wasn't healthy going into that game. Worth noting that as well. But just between these two teams, and I remember early on, UBC got, I forget if it was an offside penalty or what, whether it was a play clock violation. And you know, definitely the comment came up of being like, they better have been practicing with those speakers on pretty loud. At the end of the day, This is a team that only got two penalties. Montreal got five penalties, got three more penalties than UBC did in this game. You know, the one turnover, the one interception, I should say, for Montreal, none for UBC. And just such buttoned up football on both sides of the ball for these teams. And like, you know, because you can look at, once again, you can just look at the breakdown of this. Just think about like a game where, you know, final score 16-9. I mean, on the one hand, like just feels like such a Canadian football type of score almost. But you could look at that score and be like, ugh, was this two bad teams just like, you know, toughing it out? No, this was two tremendous teams dueling it out all game long. And as you said, if not for one break and contain when Seneca was able to get through about midway point, just past midway point of the third quarter, like this game is neck and neck all throughout the whole game. It still was neck and neck. UBC had a shot at the end of the game for, you know, a Hail Mary's opportunity to quote from The Longest Yard, a little schoolyard bullshit type of maneuver to try and get into the end zone to tie it up. And I want to go back. I think we've mentioned his name at least to just talk about Garrett Rooker because as you highlighted, Matthew Peterson out of Alberta, and just, you know, the great year that he had, not to take away from him, is the Can West representative MVP, Heck Crayton nominee, if I'm remembering that correctly. Seneca is the Heck Crayton Award winner, and obviously this is a game that doesn't exhibit that much offense. So on the one hand, you could, once again, look at this game, even if you were following it more thoroughly, and be like, nah, well, you know what? Yeah, Garrett Rooker, 26 or 40, 279, no touchdowns, no interceptions. This guy feels real deal. This offense has so many weapons, obviously, in the backfield with Knight. We've talked about Sam Davenport. But, you know, one of the things that you and I often love to turn to and just how we look at quarterback play and really analyze the full offense is when it's not just the one guy. It's certainly one of the things we've loved about, second time bringing up McMaster on the Vanier Cup podcast in 2023, but the way that, you know, going back to, you know, with Coach P as the head coach there, right? And the way that with Andreas Duick at the helm, the way that he was spreading the ball out, the way that Taylor Elgersma, even with, Jordan and Thorne, the way that he still would have games where those guys wouldn't even shine. And I say all that and then looking at, you know, Davenport gets five receptions, 66 yards. Kapler gets 5 receptions as well. Robertson with another 5. McBean with 3. And then a whole bunch of receptions sprinkled in and out. Knight getting some receptions as well. So obviously working out of the backfield. And as we've talked about, just watching, when we watch these Can West football teams, particularly when it's in the U Sports playoffs, it just has that feel of a professional looking offense to what we come to expect in from watching CFL football. So I just want to take the opportunity there again to just say, like, once again, this wasn't just two teams. Like, it wasn't like, okay, someone has to win this type of game. This was, oh my goodness, these are the, like, it, lower scoring, no doubt, but it did feel, whether as exciting for different reasons, but just as exciting as Saskatchewan Laval last year.
Certainly. And I think one of the biggest things in there, and you've detailed it as well, is the fact that, like, this game is never out of reach. Mm-hmm. It's one touchdown. It's one score, and then you're tied up and we're going to overtime. And with the way that these defenses are playing here, it might have been like 4 overtimes before we actually saw another score. But still, like, the entire time, they're not out of it. And while, yes, UBC, I don't think they played their best game by any means. And shout out once again to that Montreal defense. They played really well. I do think that they were able to move the ball pretty well here. Like, 26 for 40 and 279 yards on a Montreal defense that, like I said, is arguably one of the best ever, is nothing to sneeze at here. Garrett Rooker really played his heart out here. He found Sam Davenport. He found Dane Kapler, Lucas Robertson, Jason Soriano, Ryan Baker, Isaiah Knight. Like, the list goes on and on about how they really got involved in this passing game here. There was quite a few things, and I love the fact that you brought up that counter Trey look that UBC did, and the pulling guards and things that they were doing, because not only were they doing that, they were able to run play action off of that and trying to get the Montreal defense flowing in certain ways in order to create some more avenues for passes down the field. And I think that was a lot of the offensive game plan in here, to try to get that Montreal defense flowing in one way or the other, get them out of position and try to find guys down the field. Really, I loved what I saw from this UBC squad. I really liked the capabilities that they had, and I really think that they were just right there. There were so many times, like, I think it was in the second quarter, and Garrett Rooker is running a little bit, and he's trying to find his receiver, and he has to throw it across his body, and it goes just behind his receiver, just out of the hands, and he's like right on the goal line, and instead they have to settle for 3. And so, like, if he just connects on that one, then suddenly this is a vastly different game here, because now it's even tighter, or it's a tied up, or whatever the case. So there's so many things. And like we said before, when you only lose by a certain amount of points or even just one score, you start looking at all of the different things that you could have done in order to get into that. And coulda, woulda, shoulda game is not a great thing to kind of go down here, but it just goes to show, man, they were so close. They were so close to doing this, and against one of the best teams.
Yeah. And you know what's kind of just remarkable, again, thinking about this Montreal defense, is how, like, on the one hand, we look at what Rooker and this offense did for UBC. They get 279 yards in the air. That's about around 80 to 90 yards more than Montreal had been giving out per average on the year. Now, they only rushed it for 84, but them being held to 9 points, like, it's so crazy that a team can hold their opponent in the Vanier Cup to lower than their season average, this being Montreal and their points per game given up, when their season average is 11 points. Like, that's the type of stuff where you think, like, you think we're going to go into this game and be like, well, maybe, hey, UBC, maybe they still win, but UBC scores 18 or something like that, the high teens, mid to high teens, and you're like, well, hey, you know what? When it comes down to that final game of the year, you know you're facing the best of the best, and, hey, they got a couple more points. So even though the yardage stacked up for UBC in slightly higher amounts than Montreal had been giving up, and obviously you highlight that play where, like, the, you know, the classic tale of inches in the sport of football, and just like milliseconds and all these things changing the tides of any given ball game, at the end of the day, this defense still came and shut the dang door with authority. And the last thing I'll say just on that point, and frankly, I think my commentary on the game on a whole is kind of wrapping up a bit too, Just once again, to think about what Garrett Rooker did leading this passing team, because you know, you brought up again this idea that while UBC was using those counter trade looks, that run game look, to also set up their play action, this wasn't a situation. Like sometimes we talk about, like, you know, your Lauriers and Westerns might be the best defenses, but their passing yards per game might be oddly high in comparison to where you think they'd be, because teams have to throw the ball on them because their offenses are so good they get up, right? And so other teams have to throw the ball more, and just on aggregate it adds up, and then the passing defense looks a little less than. That wasn't the case with the way that UBC was moving the ball on offense. You know, they get 12 passing first downs, they get 6 rushing first downs. They kept a balanced attack all the way through. And so I just say that, and then saying that in a situation where it wasn't even necessarily, hey, we have to start throwing it. Like, obviously, Rooker throws it 40 times in this game. That's a very healthy amount of attempts. But it wasn't that feeling of UBC being like, the only way we can have success here is if we just take shot after shot after shot, and know that even if only a handful of those land, we might be able to stick in this game. No, they kept their attack balanced. That was very much the argument that almost swayed me to pick UBC, which was just, on the whole, they looked like the more balanced offense. But then at the end of the day, Montreal still shut the door. Tom, not to direct what comment you might have, we haven't really talked about Jonathan Senegal in this game.
Well, listen, one more thing to kind of go into what you were just talking about there. You know, we mentioned that how unbelievable it was that Montreal's defense averaged 11 points, giving up 11 points per game, and they held UBC under that. UBC still scored the most amount of points against Montreal in the playoffs here. Sherbrooke scored 3 points. Laval scored 6 points. Western scored 3 points. So as insane that is, UBC scoring 9 points is still the most amount of points that they let up in the playoffs here. Like, that's nuts. That's absolutely insane.
Disgusting.
But certainly, like, for all of the amazing things that we've seen here, Jonathan Senegal, and I think he's getting the same kind of treatment that we have when we expect that level of greatness here. You know, we expect that greatness when it comes to Taylor Eguzman, when it comes from Evan Hillock. And so it's more so when we don't see that we really notice it. But Jonathan Senegal here, once again, like, he is the lifeblood of this Montreal offense here. There were so many times where I thought he was dead to rights, and he makes a man miss running down the sidelines and throws an unbelievable pass and is able to just work some magic here. Obviously, he's the number one passer, 16 for 26, 170 yards, and one interception. Once again, he is also the number one rusher, 6 attempts for 53 yards and a touchdown as well. So they really rely on this young man to do kind of everything. And once again, I don't have the exact stats out in front of me here, but it has been a very long time since the Heck Crichton was also the Vanier Cup MVP. And all of the accolades that this young man gets is certainly warranted here. He has been really, really outstanding for this squad. I wanted to make sure. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I wanted to make sure that he didn't get lost in this. But I think this is the same tale of the season here. You know, Montreal's offense, while still being great, and Jonathan Senegal being the Heck Crichton for a reason here, they're set up with that unbelievable defense that Montreal brings, and that's really the story of this game.
Yeah, and you know, I don't have them in front of me, but just some of the quotes from Senegal after the game, really highlighting just that, how that defense, and you know, you don't have to know too much about football in any country at any level to recognize that, as he did, just that defense just makes his job that much easier. And especially, like, we talked about with Laurier, with how the kicking game was kind of going a little south on them, and how whether they would do so intentionally or not, or what have you, start to change their offensive planning as far as, like, well, where is field goal range, and what are, you know, when is we're going to go for it on, or you know, is a second and medium all of a sudden a time where we have to throw, whatever it might be. Like, with a defense like that, you just know that you can throw caution to the wind and be like, hey, you know what? if we turn the ball over, if we, you know, set them up with a less than optimal field position, they're probably gonna be okay. And as a result, we're gonna be okay. And, you know, once again, not to take away from Senegal, but if we could just give that defense the MVP of this whole playoff run for Montreal, you know, the same way that we talked about, well, U Sports Award winners, that's just regular season. You have your MVPs, offense and defense, for the Vanier Cup. If there was a overall playoff MVP that you could add in to boot, it is the defense of the Montreal Carabins. Allez les Bleus, allez les Bleus. Was that the cadence of it? It was something like that.
Yeah, that was. Yes, that was.
Tom, yeah, I pretty much exhausted my comments from the game. Of course, as we were saying, we didn't get a chance to rewatch it. Neither of us did, for that matter. Whether we want to talk about some more of the sights and sounds being there, or maybe actually the point of not being able to rewatch it can lead us in just a brief comment. We can just say, you know, before recording, I wanted to ask my dad just like any thoughts he wanted to add in. And he's, you know, he mentioned, hey, you know, the camera shots were beautiful. The commentating was fantastic. It was amazing work by the sideline reporter. But you know, the fact that these commentators weren't live in Kingston, just and you have some on some authority that it doesn't seem like Mark Lee was overly pleased about the fact that he wasn't there. And it was funny, obviously, I don't know if they said on the broadcast at any point, you know, live from Toronto, it's the Vanier Cup in Kingston. But my dad pointed out pretty quickly, just watching it, being like, these guys clearly aren't in Kingston. They're just wearing like suits, like jacket suits. Like they aren't dressed for the weather. You know, we don't need to dive too thoroughly into that conversation, but I guess we're here now. Might as well talk about it. Yeah.
For sure, because there was some comments online about this as well. And I do just want to make sure, like, CBC and all of the work that they've done, we are very appreciative of. Is like, I still stand by the fact that the Cannes West production was better, in my opinion, than that. But still, a major organization is picking up the game. They're covering it. So I do appreciate that. That decision to not have them in on the field or out at the game, I don't believe comes from CBC. I think that comes from U Sports and the fact that they're trying to make those budget cuts and they're trying to do some other things. And I think that while saving some dollars and cents at that spot, like, there's a lot of things that are still going on here that both Zach and I really don't agree with. And when you are trying to grow the game and you are trying to gain more fan appreciation, more fan interaction at any given point that you can here, at some point in time, you got to pony up and you got to pay for it. So come speaking on the outside of it, completely not understanding what goes on in the offices of U Sports, I'll give them that credit here, but just know for the folks who noticed that as well and who seem to be a little upset, that was not, if it was up to Deshaun Stevens and to Mark Lee, they'd be at the game. They'd be calling it exactly how they would want to, for sure. So just make sure that the frustrations that you have are pointed, maybe not even necessarily at the right people, but just not at the wrong people.
Brilliant distinction to make. And by all accounts, and to no surprise, Lee and Stevens were inimitable on the call. I forget the name of the person that was doing the sideline reporting, but obviously a lovely touch that for OUA viewers we don't often get, or really we never get in our games as well. So hey, on the whole, though, of course, as we acknowledged with a number of high school bowl games, at least in Ontario and perhaps in other provinces as well, still wrapping up this past week after the Vanier Cup. Thinking about the Vanier as symbolic closure of the Canadian football season, with the Grey Cup wrapping up the week before, just on so many levels, and we wouldn't be us, Tom, if we didn't nitpick on it a little bit. A fantastic finish to it on all levels. Oh, Tom, this is where it starts to get a little misty in here. Anything else before we tie a little bow on this and say a few words before you know, riding off into the proverbial sunset for, well, we'll talk about that in a moment. Any last words here?
Just what an incredible year. What an incredible season. How happy I am, how lucky I am to get to call this game and to get to do the things I do with you, my friend. It has been nothing but a pleasure to kind of go through this and talk all things U Sports football with you on a weekly basis. This was another fantastic year. And while I am sad to see it go, folks out there, do not think that we are done by any means here. You might still be hearing our voices a little bit more in the off season.
Yeah, most certainly. With the amount of time we got to spend in the car, which was such a pleasure and privilege, and thank you again for picking me up on your way from Hamilton to Kingston, making a little stop in Toronto. We've plotted out some of the off-season content schedule that you will be getting from us, but it won't be for some time because we're still going to work out the kinks on it, still have some people to get in contact with, and work out a few nooks and crannies, as well as, you know, take a bit of a rest, if we're being completely honest about it. You know, several hours a week going into this production on top of all the other things me and Tom have in our lives. I think we can rightly take a little bit of a moment to hang up the mics, go back to the film, you know, listen to the air checks, you know, see where we flourished and see where there's room for improvement. So just from a sort of a rough outline of what you can sort of expect to keep an eye out for, we'll probably go quiet for the better part of the first half of December. We'll touch back in around the holidays when we have likely a better outlook of the timing of the schedule, the content schedule that you will get come the new year. Doing some of our wraps on teams, trying to set up some interviews with folks within the programs to get some insights, some deeper insights, I should say, as far as just the state of some of these organizations, and just a few other content pieces that we're looking to produce through the off season. Making our way into the summer. And hey, folks, before you know it, we're going to be talking about the CFL draft. We're going to be talking about major recruits, rosters shaping up, way too early season predictions. So I think we all deserve a little break right now to kind of let this season just, you know, like after a great meal, just give it time to digest and appreciate the luxury that it was, that it always is, when we get to sit back, watch, and then reflect on the great football we have in the university level, and of course for us, specifically in the OUA. So I won't say any more about all of that for now, but hopefully that gives you some sense, some assurance, as Tom said, that though we won't be hearing us from a little bit, that we will be back. Tom, I mean, hey, obviously it won't be the last you hear from me before we get there, but as always, my immense appreciation and thanks to you for being on this journey with me, for us to take this journey together, because it certainly wouldn't have it. It certainly wouldn't happen without you by any means. And what a ride it's been. Tom, last thoughts before we officially put a bow on the 2023 U Sports football season.
Yeah, shout out to Peter Bierce for being the best dressed at the Vanier Cup. I still cannot properly get over how appreciative I am to that man. For those of you who have not seen, Mr. Bierce is the Queens super fan who is at every single home game with an unbelievably distinctive outfit. And on this particular day, because his Gales were not playing in the Vanier Cup, he designed a shirt calling out the At the 55 podcast here. Peter, we really cannot tell you how unbelievable that is to us to have that support from you and to have that appreciation here. Although we didn't get a chance to connect with you at the game that was there, just know that the appreciation that we have for you and for the fan base of the OUA and for everybody who tunes into us, whether it's one episode or every episode, is just through the roof. This is a passion project from us that we do just because we love the game. We love the athletes that are here. We want to see more and more emphasis be put on this great game that we call our own. And to have that little thing that you did, that making the t-shirt and calling us out, it was just so incredible. So thank you, sir. And thank you to all of you who listen to us.
Most definitely. I don't even want to start. I mean, Peter Biersch, just for what you did at LeVanier, deserves the shout out by name. I don't want to start naming off the other names. I mean, you know what? We'll have to say Ken Waller's name because, of course, Ken Waller. Absolutely. I mean, OUA football in Canada just like it wouldn't persist on the level it does on the commentating standpoint and just all the immense tidbits that you pull out and just keep us all attuned and abreast to, you know, everything that you illuminate us to. So shout out to you. I'll stop it from there, because if I try to go any further, I will no doubt be leaving folks out, and invariably I'll start crying, and no one wants to hear that on the podcast. So yeah, once again, thank you to everyone for making the season so special. Thank you to all the teams, all the organizations. We'll do our breakdowns on those clubs with hopefully some special guests to once again illuminate us to more information. So you know, as my mom would say, it's not goodbye, it's ciao for now. So I can't tell you exactly when it will be, but you'll be hearing from us in the near future at the 55.